Welcome to Family Ties, a breath of fresh parenting education. This podcast is an audio version of the Family Ties sessions we typically hold within our district with a large audience or one-on-one with our family liaisons. We use a research-based curriculum called Practical Parenting. We know some families can attend our sessions, and this is the reason why we decided to create this podcast, available to you 24/7. This is your host, Angie Nieto. I am a family liaison with District 33. I am trained in parenting education and prevention work. This podcast is sponsored by District 33 Community Schools and We Go Together for Kids. Anything that's human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can be more manageable. When we talk about our feelings, they become less overwhelming, less upsetting, and less scary. Fred Rogers. In today's episode, we are going to talk with experts about school refusal and school anxiety. During this pandemic, our students have had to adjust to new ways of learning. And as slowly school begins to open up again, new things have come up and we want to be ready. We will review signs and symptoms of school refusal and anxiety. We will talk about ways to treat it and resources. This is your host, Angie Nieto. Let's get started. Hello, friends. Welcome to the 10th episode of Family Ties, a Breath of Fresh Parenting Education podcast. Today, we have two wonderful guests. They are experienced case therapists, Chaney Rummel and Nia Cortez from Northwestern Medicine Behavioral Health. Let's welcome them for our episode of the day. Hello, Ms. Rummel.
Hello, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
Very good. I also have Nia Cortez here with me.
Hello, Ms. Nia Cortez. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am going to ask you guys to please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, both of you, your role in Northwestern Medicine, and your training, please.
Sure. So I'm Chaney, and I'm a case therapist here in our outpatient adolescent mental health program. I have my clinical license in counseling, and I've been working for Northwestern Medicine for about 6 years now.
Thank you. Ms. Nia?
Hi, so I'm Nia Cortez. I'm also a case therapist as well, and I have my clinical license in social work, and I've been with Northwestern for about 4 years now.
Very good. Thank you so much for telling us your roles with Northwestern Medicine. I am so excited to have you both in here today. As you know, welcome to Family Ties. This is our podcast with District 33. And you guys are our 10th episode. We're super excited to have this one for parents. They have been asking for this for a while, especially right now when the pandemic is happening and our kids are e-learners and are starting to come back. This is something that we have in the back of our heads and are preparing for.
Thank you so much.
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to say this is great that you're doing this.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Thank you. So we actually have a tradition, but before I do that, let me let you guys know and all our listeners too know that I am in school and therefore we have a bell that goes on and off here and there when they are in transition of classes. So I apologize for the bell ringing that is happening in about 10 minutes. So I wanted to make sure you have heads up on that. And here in Family Ties, we have a tradition for all of our guests, and that is to share how do you practice self-care and what is self-care to you?
Sure. That's a great tradition, first off. Self-care is so important. So for me, I would say that probably one of the best ways I can take care of myself is I have two teenage daughters of my own, and I absolutely love spending time with them. So doing things as a family just feels great. I also enjoy listening to or reading good psychological thrillers.
Oh, that sounds like fun. How about for you, Ms. Cortez?
Yeah, so what I like to do is right after work, I like hitting the gym. So I love going to the gym, whether it be running outside when it's nice out or doing a good like kickbox workout. I'm really close with my sister, and so we tend to like to spend a lot of time with each other. She's like a big adventure goer, so she kind of drags me along, but it's fun. But one thing too to kind of wind my day down is I'm really into this show called Monk. And so that's just been a nice, like, you know, go-to to just kind of wind down the day. And it's really nice watching it.
Wow. I have not heard of that show, but I will look into it.
Yeah, I think it's a great show for the family. It's good.
Perfect. Well, thank you for sharing ways that people can take care of themselves. We always ask our guests because we want to make sure that we tell parents that it's okay. It's okay to take a moment for yourself. It's okay to take care of yourself, you know, after so much happening around you. So,
yeah.
Our goal in this podcast is to inform families about things that are important to learn or be aware of in the children's lives. So we provide parenting education and information, and that's why we bring in guests like you, ladies. And I'm so glad to have you. Because we have this special topic to cover about school refusal and mental health. And so the first question for me would be just diving right into the topic. Can anxiety prevent students from going to school, or can school provoke anxiety feelings for students?
Sure. Yeah, this is a great topic, like I said. Anxiety can absolutely become a debilitating obstacle for our kids. The pressures of school are actually a lot different than they used to be. So, you know, when I find myself or I hear parents say, well, when I was a kid, you know, things are so different for these guys. So what becomes frustrating for the parent is a very real illness can be disguised as laziness or the child becoming oppositional regarding school attendance. And most children want to succeed, just like we do as adults. But when they're trying to manage this intense anxiety, they often don't know how to walk themselves through these feelings and they get stuck.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And so what are like those physical signs of anxiety? How does anxiety look like physically for a young child or a teen? Because I think that as parents, sometimes we tend to think, well, they're trying to avoid school because they just don't want to go today. But what does anxiety look like physically?
Yeah, it's a good question. So anxiety can present in a variety of ways, and it's, you know, depending on the kiddo. But to throw a few symptoms out that are typically common that what we see is you'll notice your kid feeling maybe very restless, having a hard time concentrating, you know, not being able to just complete simple homework that they used to complete before, maybe become very irritable. You hear a lot of worry thoughts like, you know, I don't know if I could do this today, but like so-and-so might be there or but da 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 da. You know, muscle tension is also common as well. Stomach aches. They'll ask to go to the bathroom a lot. You know, crying, refusing to get out of bed, can, you know, to touch base with oppositional, even start to become a little physical. Just kind of think about like when you're cornering an animal that's scared, it lashes out. So it could even get to that point for some parents with their child.
Yeah. So just like not off topic, but about me more. My daughter actually experienced school refusal when she was in second grade. And it was something that at the beginning was kind of like confusing for us, you know, as parents. But then, you know, later when she got diagnosed and when she received treatment, it was peace of mind, obviously. But in the process of that, like some of those symptoms that you just mentioned and just being aware of those, you know, I used to think that she was just provoking the vomiting on her own, but it was not, like her stomach mm-hmm. was really upset from how much anxiety she was feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So when this occurs, all these symptoms and the opposition to attend school, and it severely affects the child's attendance in school. It can obviously bring some serious consequences for their mental health, and not to mention the truancy, which is, you know, a legal term because it is a law that students attend school. But it can also, you know, bring their grades down, which can, you know, trickle down to more mental health, anxiety, and more depression maybe. And obviously that is a more of a diagnosis. But what do you call a student or a person who has severe anxiety, I apologize for that, severe anxiety related to school? And what does that mean? How serious could this be? And if it's not followed up on or there's a treatment started?
You are correct. So it definitely can bring on some serious consequences. Leaving the anxiety untreated can lead to very debilitating mental health issues. When these kids feel so overwhelmed, they're experiencing high levels of stress. And they look at their peers and they wonder why they can't do something so simple as go to school when other kids can. It takes a terrible toll on their self-esteem, can lead to depression as well, and they start to feel hopeless sometimes.
Okay. And is school refusal classified as a disorder?
It is not. It does not have its own diagnoses in the DSM-5, but it definitely is classified as, you know, as anxiety, or we might see it as generalized anxiety disorder when it affects more different areas of life. But this would be more so in relation to school.
Got it. All right. And how can we differentiate as parents, you know, between the physical symptoms of an illness and school refusal physical signs? Is there even a way to differentiate the two of them?
This can be tough sometimes.
I'm going to stop you right there for a second. That is the bell. And students are getting out of their questions and into transitions. But yes. So you were telling us, is there a way to differentiate the two?
Yeah. So, you know, like I was saying, this can be tough sometimes because, you know, the physical symptoms do have like the physical illness piece, and anxiety does play onto our body. But I think first start is to just parents having to have conversations with their kiddos goes a long way. Talking about it, you know, getting them familiar about it, not having shame around it. You know, if you as a parent can target, you know, that they're experiencing anxiety through the symptoms they mentioned, you can sometimes, you know, attribute the physical symptoms to the anxiety as well. One thing for the parents to know is that everybody is going to experience anxiety at some point in their life, right? Think about they have a deadline due for work, or they are going to be talking to someone they don't know, giving a presentation. There's some sort of anxiety feeling that happens, but, you know, like Chaney was saying, when it becomes a disorder or it becomes an issue in even like a kid's life is when it stops them from being able to live, and it paralyzes them, and they just feel like there's no way out, and they're consumed with so much fear. It makes them feel very uncomfortable. And so I think parents just having a conversation around the fact that, yeah, we can get scared, but despite feeling scared, there's courage there that we use to push through it. And so, you know, having that conversation, being able to be like, all right, so, you know, where does it hurt? Why does it hurt? Like helping them process that instead of shunning them and saying like, oh, you're fine. Because clearly they're not. I think it's just parents being comfortable talking to their kids, you know, just talking to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And how important it is to you know, keep in mind and saying this to our students that we have to remind them that they, you know, we all can get anxious. We all can have anxiety, and how, you know, we can show them that too. Like the work part that you talked about is so important to keep that in mind. So, and thank you so much for sharing that part. And are there any like potential mental health related diagnoses? I know you mentioned obviously some more chronic, more diagnosed like illnesses or that are related to anxiety when anxiety is present in a student's life?
Sure. Yeah. We could, like I had mentioned earlier, sometimes this will, we'll see depression. We also see quite a bit of social anxiety, especially with the pandemic and how some of these kids have been, you know, we're home for so many months. And I think these transitions have been very difficult for these kids. So yeah, we see some, we're seeing more social anxiety and some learning disorders. So absolutely.
All right. How important it is, or I guess, how can parents help their kids to overcome school refusal or school anxiety?
So I would say that one of the best things you can do is get your child connected up with an assessment. You can come in for an assessment. And within the assessment, they would determine what level of care is most appropriate for the kids. We have an adolescent program that is 13 to 18 year olds. It runs on weekdays. So we do have programs available out here at, we have a new program out here in the Denada location. We're affiliated, of course, with Central DuPage Hospital.
All right. And so thank you for bringing that up, because I was just about to ask you. I know that Northwestern has a very nice program for school refusal. And is there a program can parents just sign up their child for this program? Or how can they contact Northwestern? And are there any qualifications to be able to access these services?
So really, is, you know, as far as qualifications go, if you notice that your child is struggling and you feel that they may need an assessment or they're just not acting themselves, like I said, you can definitely schedule an assessment with us. And we make sure that your child is able to get the assistance that they need that is within network. We find a program, whether it's our program or another program, that is within network for your insurance. So we can help you out with that.
All right. Perfect. And do you guys have like some literacy or some publications that are like up on a website that parents can access with additional information regarding this topic?
So if they go on to, so they can even look it up and through Google with Central DuPage Hospital Behavioral Health Services, it'll lead to our website. We do have a website page, and on there, they will be able to find a lot of different services that we offer, as well as other additional educational resources, that CDH or Northwestern does offer for parents.
So I have come across this other question, and I just thought about it right now. When we have made referrals to our parents, so here in the school, we try to provide parents with linkage and access to resources. And so when we've made a referral out to, like, for example, Northwestern, I know that some questions that parents are wondering about is always, how does the program look like? What are some of the things that are done during those sessions?
Yeah, so with our program here at Wheaton Donato, the kids are in, majority of them are in groups, and we teach them about anxiety and coping, depression and coping. We teach them kind of, you know, different life skills, how to think differently, how to process things differently. You know, so they'll be in a group setting learning those skills. We also provide individual therapy as well. So, you know, every kid that comes through and gets into our program is assigned to a case therapist. They're assigned to a psychiatrist for medication purposes. And, you know, the therapist and the psychiatrist really become the kid's treatment team. And the kiddo is involved as in their treatment, looking at how, you know, what specifically do they want to work on? What brought them in? You know, what do, you know, what do they want their case therapist to be aware of? So, you know, the case therapist is there helping, you know, guide them through this process. You know, we talk with parents as well to kind of, you know, help the parents as best as we can. You know, so here in program, it's pretty intensive where we're just kind of getting them back to analyzing, processing, progressing, and then linking them up to the next step here. We're also pretty, you know, we get linked up with schools as well. Case therapists do talk back and forth with the school. We have a school transition meeting where, you know, we sit down with the school, you know, we have a school liaison and we talk about, all right, school, this is what's been going on. This is what they're working on. These are their concerns. You know, how can school be supportive on their end? So everybody's on the same page as they transition back to school.
Oh, I see. And, you know, here comes another question that just came to mind too. Another thing that parents do worried about, and we have heard, me and my colleagues here, is sometimes our parents want things to happen from one day to another. You know, as a parent, you're like, okay, I took them to the first session. Why is my child not wanting to go to school still? Like, you know, how long does it take the process for them? Obviously, it's probably individually, but about when you start seeing some changes, because I know things have to like slowly build up, you know, and work on report. But like, what are those big steps that happen during these sessions, and like about how long can it take?
Sure. So you are very correct in saying that, you know, it definitely depends on the child, depends on their motivation, their level of motivation, their level of support, the level of the school support. There's a lot of variables that play into that. I would say, though, probably that one of the best things that parents can do is to be patient with the process, because it is a process. And much of what they do when the kids first come in is, you know, they're learning a lot of skills. They don't necessarily jump to practicing right away. And that takes time to unfold. We encourage them to start practicing some of these skills, but that's, you know, we have them do a full day program for a period of time. Sometimes that can be, it's usually around 2 weeks, give or take. And then when they're ready to step down into our half day level of programming, we'll have them do that. And at that point, you know, we're really challenging the kids to start stepping back into school a little bit while also continuing on with a shorter day in the program. And so it's really getting their feet wet, giving them a chance to practice some of their skills, and for these parents to practice patience. So. Yeah, like they haven't been already, but yeah, so it's, you know, it's work in progress. And even when they discharge from the program, you know, we get them going in the right direction. That's our hope, is to, I kind of picture it, you know, if you want to picture a metaphor, I kind of picture it like when we get some of these kids in, it's like we've been given a boulder and this boulder is stuck. And if we can get that boulder kind of moving in the right direction, you know, the kids feel stuck, the parents feel stuck. And so if we can kind of get that boulder moving in the right direction, that's what we want. But where that boulder ends up or ultimately goes, you know, that's going to take some time. And so we do, when they discharge from here, we make sure they're linked up with the next level of care. and hopefully they can keep that boulder rolling.
Yeah, what a great analogy and great way to explain it to the parents. I love when I have this little drops of information that I can give to parents that are comparable,
yeah,
you know, and kind of give you a visual. So thank you for that. So we are getting to the end of the of our conversation today. And how can people contact you or your office?
Okay, so our main line for Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital is 630-933-4000. And so that'll take you to our main line. And if an assessment is needed, this is where you can certainly have your child signed up for an assessment.
Okay. Very good. Do you recommend that parents talk to their pediatricians first and then, you know, have then make that phone call?
It absolutely doesn't hurt, but it's not necessary. I mean, it's not something that needs to happen before they walk in our door. So I don't know if, does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Because sometimes, you know, we have parents saying, well, let me take them to the pediatrician first. So if it's not necessary, it's not a requirement by the office, you know, they can certainly make that mm-hmm. jump. So,
absolutely.
Okay, so Ms. Rommel and Ms. Cortez, I'm going to thank you so, so much again for being here with us today. We know how busy you are. We know things have been difficult for a lot of people, and mm-hmm. you work in an environment where so much support is needed and appreciated, and I just wanted to take a moment to tell you and your colleagues and everyone that you work around, thank you so much for everything that you have been doing all the time, but most importantly now, when there's so much happening around us, and you guys certainly make things a lot easier. So thank you for that, and thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you would like to add for our families?
I just want to say, just in general, thank you for the accolades, but just in general, there's been a lot of change for our kids throughout the last year. And if it seems like your child is having a difficult time regulating, or even if they're just not acting themselves, please talk to them. Investigate further. There's no shame in asking for help.
So I'm going to ask a follow-up question on that. What are some questions that parents can ask their child so that they don't receive an answer with yes or no, and we just let it go?
So I'm going to teach you a little trick about open-ended questions. Yeah. So when asking a question, don't ask them a yes, no question. Don't give them that way out. Ask them a question that requires more words, and they should give you more words, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But asking them an open-ended question, you know, not a yes-no question, you might get more information, and they might give you a little more to listen to.
Perfect. All right, ladies. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to stop the recording in just a minute, but again, thank you for being here, and have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of the week. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your time with the people you love. And hopefully we'll talk to you.
Okay. Soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Bye. All right, friends. This was all for today. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Family Ties, and thank you to Ms. Rommel and Ms. Cortez for joining us today. I am sure that you guys got a lot of really good information that will help you with your student at home. And don't forget to subscribe and to share with other parents this episode or any other episode that we have recorded. I know it's been a little while, but we have a lot more planned, so don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss on any of our episodes. Also, if you have suggestions or you have comments or other topics you'd like to talk about, please, please reach out. Make sure you hit the email button and you send us a message. This is your host, Angie Nieto. Don't forget to enjoy your family, enjoy your loved ones. Until next time.